Health Buzz with Dr. Jim Keeney at www.jim.md.
The expense of healthcare in America is out of control. One issue that almost everyone agrees on. It's bad enough in prosperous times, but as the economy sours, the choice between the necessities like food, shelter, clothing, and healthcare become real for many Americans. Welcome to the Health Buzz Podcast, your only source for prescription-strength health information. I'm your host, Dr. Jim Keeney, emergency physician at Mission Hospital Regional Medical Center in Mission Viejo, California. Today, we will discuss simple strategies to reduce your healthcare costs and save those dollars for other necessities of life. As the economy fell last year, the percentage of people who reported having trouble paying for healthcare or medications increased, and it rose from 18% in January of 2008 to 21% in December of 2008. And this is according to a Gallup poll of 355,000 Americans. Each percentage point here represents about 2.2 million people, and this is a 3 percentage point change. That's pretty significant. Fewer Americans, we're talking 58% now, report getting health care coverage through their jobs. And that's always been the primary place where people find health care coverage. USA Today quotes Jim Clifton, Gallup's CEO, and he says the biggest problem that this country has is actually the cost of health care. It's a lot bigger problem than the war and a bigger problem than the current meltdown because there are no fixes to it on the horizon right now. You just can't throw money at it. That's not a fix. I completely agree with Mr. Clifton. So today we're going to talk about 8.5 ways to save healthcare dollars. Number one, let's talk about care in context. You want to develop a good relationship with a primary care physician. This connection saves money when the doctor knows you personally and knows your medical history. I can tell you, in the emergency department, I get extra tests on people because I don't know their background. I don't know whether certain things have been tested for. I don't know the significance of when they complain of certain problems. When you've been to a doctor every day for 10 years, well, okay, not every day, every month for 10 years complaining of chest pain, it has a lot different context than when you show up in an emergency department complaining of chest pain. Two totally different approaches, and that's why having a doctor that understands you and knows your history is very important. Number two, don't use emergency departments unless absolutely necessary. That's kind of a corollary to number one, and I think that's pretty obvious. It's a very expensive place to get health care, and obviously if you need it, you gotta go there. But some people go there because of convenience, because we're open 24 hours a day. Some people go there because they have no place else to go. And I understand that, but at the same time, that's gonna cost you a lot of money. Number three, an ounce of prevention saves a pound of cure. It's an old adage, but it's still true. You got to get and stick with the program. Take medications that are prescribed to you as they're prescribed. Don't try and make them last longer by taking less medicine than prescribed, or don't adjust the dose to what you think it should be without at least talking to your doctor about it. You want to make appropriate lifestyle changes as if you'd have to pay for your own indiscretions. You know, people overindulge in alcohol and food. They don't wear their seatbelts. They smoke. They use illicit drugs and have other risky behaviors. I think a lot of it is because we're kind of a nanny state here in the United States. You're going to get taken care of, and we all know it. And so rather than taking care of yourself as if you're going to have to pay for this, that's what a lot of people do. Of course, the recommendation is eat well, exercise, stop smoking, get adequate sleep, you know, and don't trade stress for success. Stress management is clearly something that drives people to the emergency department, or I should say a lack of stress management, drives people to doctors in general. We all agree, and when I talk to my fellow physicians, that business is booming because of the stress of this economy. Number four, don't go directly to a specialist without checking with your primary care doctor, even if you're allowed to with your insurance. And that's because a medical quarterback to coordinate the approach to your medical care prevents wasteful and possibly harmful over-testing, especially duplication of treatments. I see so many people where the cardiologist orders a series of tests. One of them may be to check for a blood clot in your lung, and then another doctor orders a series of tests, and one of them is a different test to check for a blood clot for your lungs. If the two of them got together, they could have decided on the same test and decided which test was most appropriate. And because they're separate and you don't realize that those two different tests were to check for the same problem, you end up being over-tested. And sometimes we find incidental things that have nothing to do with your problem, and suddenly you're going down a different rabbit hole that's completely unnecessary. Next, ignore drug ads. Those slick, direct-to-consumer come-ons lead you to believe that new drugs have a real advantage over old ones, but the old standbys, which don't have big advertising budgets behind them, often get overlooked, both by doctors and by patients. The older drugs are often just as effective and sometimes more effective, and definitely, in my mind, safer. I believe that any drug that's been on the market for 20 years is just, by definition, going to be safer than something that appears to be equal and it's only been on the market for a year. And that's because we just don't know. It's that aftermarket surveillance that tells us. And you look at the FDA, how many drugs in the last 5 years have been pulled off the market? Quite a few. This is something that I think is very important. Older, as far as drugs go, older is better and almost always cheaper. A corollary to number five, ignoring drug ads, is go generic and do that whenever possible. Sometimes your doctor will prescribe something if you just say, hey, is this available in a generic form, or is something similar, very close to this, available in a generic form? He will often say yes. I know I prescribe things, sometimes they're the newer drugs because they are only taken once a day, and I feel like the patient is more likely to take the medicine if it's only once a day as opposed to four times a day. If you really need to save the money and you're willing to make that commitment, why don't you tell the doctor, hey, I'm willing to take a medicine multiple times a day. Number six, you want to fight inertia. If you're taking a medicine that you've been taking for quite a while, discuss with your doctor how long you've been taking it and whether it's worth continuing on it. If it's not working for you especially, maybe you should talk about not taking it anymore. The classic drugs for this are for over-the-counter things like antihistamines for allergies, acid reflux medications. Those are kind of prime candidates to consider being discontinued. Number seven, question the need for expensive tests. Now, we all like the idea that we're getting paid attention to, that the doctor's taking our complaint seriously, and that he is ordering what looks like very high-level testing. Now, the problem is you push to get new and expensive tests, and in this current climate of medicine in the United States, you will get it. Don't get these tests just because you think newer is better. If a doctor orders an expensive test, especially like an MRI or a CAT scan where you're going to be exposed to radiation, ask why you think it's necessary and how it's going to make a difference in your treatment. What is he going to do, or she going to do, with the information gained from this test? Just to know what's going on is not a good reason to get a test if the result does not drive some meaningful change in the treatment. For example, you get a MRI of your back to look for a slip disc that's causing you back pain. The bottom line is, if you're not willing to consider surgery on that disc, then don't bother getting the test. If you say, you know what, doc, this pain is bad, but I don't care what you find on that CAT scan. If it shows a bulging disc that might get better on its own, and I don't want surgery, then there's no point in getting the test. And especially when you're talking about hospital admissions, if you can do the same thing on an outpatient basis, even if it's going to take a few days longer, ask the doctor, is that reasonable? Can I take a few days longer to accomplish all these tests that you want to do, but do it on an outpatient basis outside of the hospital? Because let's face it, hospitals are not safe places to be. I compare them to the freeway. If you need to be on the freeway to get somewhere, then sure, let's use it. But if you're just kind of hovering around, get off the freeway if at all possible. It's dangerous. Finally, number eight, and this is appropriate because it's end-of-life issues. It's a downer to end this whole thing on, but in my field, you really have to pay attention to this. Discussing end-of-life issues with your family and your physician is so important. Medical care near the end of life is a big-ticket item. About 20% or 1 out of 5 healthcare dollars is spent in the last year of life. And that's because we often do tests and treatments and invasive things to people as they die to try and keep them alive, even when very little hope exists that they are going to have some meaningful quality of life afterwards. And that's often because of either the guilt or the anxiety that family members feel because they don't know exactly what you would have wanted. And so they go ahead and say, either do everything, or they give useless advice like, once it's hopeless, stop working on my family member. Well, we don't do things to people when it's completely hopeless, but if there's some small potential for recovery, we'll do everything. I think that's a fault of American medicine in general, but it's something that you can take control of by discussing these issues with your physician. A study in 2008 in the Journal of American Medical Association found that cancer patients who had a discussion of end-of-life care with their physician received hospice care sooner, had lower rates of being put on a ventilator, had lower rates of resuscitation, where you're doing CPR on somebody and shocking the heart to try and get them back to life, and had lower admissions rate to the intensive care unit. Not only does that just save money, but for the individual, if this is what you would not want because you've been diagnosed with a terminal cancer, or you know you have a terminal illness, or you just say, look, I've lived a good life, I am frail and elderly, and I just don't want to be put through all these things, it's important to have that discussion with your doctor. Not only will you save healthcare dollars, but you'll save a lot of anxiety for your family members and I believe for yourself as well. I'm Dr. Jim Keeney. You've been listening to the Health Buzz podcast, your only source for prescription strength health information. Be sure to visit our website at www.jim.md, featuring on-demand podcasts of our entire library of health topics. For comments and questions, please email us at mail@jim.md. Don't forget to sign up for the free podcast by clicking on the link in the upper right-hand sidebar of my webpage. And thank you for listening. Tell a friend. It could save their life or at least a few bucks.